Chapter 6. Stranger Than Fiction. To quote Wheeler, if I had to produce a slogan for the search I see ahead of us, it would read like this: that we will first understand how simple the universe is when we realize how strange it is. It has been said that the universe is not only stranger than we imagine, it is stranger than we can imagine. Wheeler felt that if you haven't found something strange during the day, it hasn't been much of a day. Physics has taught us that nature has a way of being a little stranger than we think it ought to be. Wheeler writes in his autobiography, "The strangeness of the quantum world, from which Einstein incessantly sought escape and from which Bohr saw no escape, is real." Elsewhere, Wheeler ominously adds, "whether we like it or not." Quantum entities are incomparable, having no physical analogy to anything else. Atoms behave like atoms and nothing else. The quantum realm, the world of the really small, a world, in Bohr's words, hitherto closed to the eyes of man, is composed of objects that are unlike any other objects we have ever imagined. Quantum entities, to quote Feynman, behave in their own inimitable way. They behave in a way that is like nothing you have seen before. Subatomic objects don't exist as things, but rather as events, as happenings, as dynamic, ever-changing, interactive psychophysical processes. In the elaborate mathematical structure of quantum theory, separate objects have, in fact, no representation. Only constantly changing events have reality in the quantum realm, and these events are intimately and inextricably interconnected. What these elementary entities are and what they do are inseparably intertwined. The mystery of what they are can only be inferred from what they do. The aspects of nature represented by quantum theory are converted from elements of being to elements of doing, which basically replaces the world of material substances with a world populated by actions, events, and processes. Ceaseless, dynamic activity is the very essence of a quantum entity's being. It should be noted that people are not things in the same way that subatomic particles are not things. Not located in space or time, but in an abstract realm, the elementary quantum phenomenon, to quote Wheeler, is the strangest thing in this strange world. The strangeness of these subatomic entities is highlighted by our inability to even conceive of them separate from our participating in their genesis. It turns out that the elementary particles out of which matter is supposedly composed are not really elementary at all, but rather of a secondary derivative nature. Rather than providing the concrete stuff from which the world is made, these elementary particles are essentially abstract constructions based upon and arising out of acts of observation. This is to say that our acts of observation are more elementary than the elementary particles that are evoked in the process of observation. One of the major challenges of modern physics is to figure out how the seemingly contradictory theories of relativity and quantum mechanics can both coexist in the same universe. Wheeler writes, "In short, there is no hope in comprehending the big picture unless one takes account of both relativity and quantum mechanics." In addition to their insistence on looking at the world as an undivided whole, another similarity in both theories is their emphasis that perspective, our point of view and frame of reference, matters. Our viewpoint not only determines how we see things, but how things appear. This common ground between these two hard-to-reconcile theories is often not acknowledged. In science as well as art, our choice of frame is of fundamental importance. To quote Wheeler, "no picture is a picture that does not have a frame." The new physics requires the dissolution of the rigid, narrow, and limited/limiting frame of concepts through which we unconsciously were entrained to view our world. Like a lens through which the phenomenal world is filtered and interpreted, the pre-quantum frame of reference, through which we tried to apprehend the essential nature of reality, was unnecessarily too restrictive. Speaking about these two theories, Wheeler says, "which will be ultimately the deeper principle, time only will tell. I'm prepared to believe that the quantum principle is the deeper one." Our worldview expresses the prevailing spirit of the times we live in. The general prevalence of a worldview that still sees things mechanistically leads to and is an expression of fragmentation. How we view the world, What David Bohm calls our self-worldview includes our vision of ourselves relative to the world, thereby having a tremendous effect on our sense of ourselves. Even people who think they don't have a self-worldview have them tacitly, below the level of their conscious awareness. Thinking they don't have a self-worldview is itself a self-worldview. Our self-worldview has a profound effect on the individual and on society as a whole, not only physically, but also psychologically, spiritually, and ethically. It subliminally operates as a set of givens, of core axioms that comprise the focal settings through which we view our world. This mental lens filters out of our perceptions, and thereby out of our awareness, all features of the world that are not part of our self-worldview, potentially creating impoverishing blind spots in the process. Einstein once admitted, "I thought 100 times as much about the quantum problems as I have about general relativity theory." He confessed that 50 long years of conscious brooding had not brought him any closer to understanding the quantum. The advent of quantum mechanics represented a far greater break with the past than had been the case with the coming of special relativity or of general relativity. The theory of relativity does not stretch human understanding or credulity in a way that quantum theory does. As compared with Einstein's theory of relativity, which seems less and less strange the more deeply we think about it, the more deeply we think about quantum physics, the stranger it seems. However, the universe's mind-bending strangeness is part of its charm. In science, oftentimes, the greatest insights are won from nature's strangest features. And yet, at a certain point, the universe and quantum physics strangeness will seem utterly natural, or so I imagine. Wheeler is fond of quoting Gertrude Stein's view of modern art. "It looks strange, and it looks strange, and it looks very strange. And then suddenly, it doesn't look strange at all, and you can't understand what made it look strange in the first place." The quantum realm lacks phenomenality. To use an architectural metaphor, quantum physics has discovered that there are no fundamental building blocks of reality. In a quote attributed to Bohr, "There is no quantum world. There is only an abstract quantum description." It is wrong to think that the task of physics is to find out how nature is. Physics concerns what we can say about nature. Quantum entities aren't real in the way we usually think of real. They have no independent, intrinsic existence. They don't exist on their own. In Buddhist terminology, they have no svabhava, that is, own nature, and they cannot be said to exist when not being observed. Heisenberg famously said, "The concept of the objective reality of the elementary particles has thus evaporated." There is nothing that science is able to say about the intrinsic nature of the atom. Its fundamental nature is truly inconceivable and unspeakable. To quote a sacred Vedic scripture from ancient India, "It is that which is inconceivable, but by which all things are conceived." Having no well-defined boundaries, elementary particles exist in a state of open-ended potentiality, inhabiting, if we can even talk about location for a non-existent object, at the same time every possible universe they could potentially manifest in. To quote Heisenberg, "But the atoms or elementary particles themselves are not real. They form a world of potentialities or possibilities rather than one of things or facts." Elementary particles don't exist in the common sense meaning of the word. But if physicists treat them as if they do, then they manifest as though they do, and physicists get the right results in their equations. Everyone is happy as long as no one asks what it all means. Elementary subatomic particles are simply a construct, a convenient way of talking about what is nothing but a set of mathematical relations concerning different observations. From the modern physicist, Pauli writes, "Matter has become an abstract, invisible reality." Because an atom does not have an independent, pre-existing reality, it is meaningless to ask, for example, what an atom really is. Atoms are only concepts physicists use to describe the behavior of their measuring instruments and the outcomes of their experiments. An idea such as an atom emerges from the interaction between the observer and the observed, mediated through the particular measuring devices used to make any specific observation. The behavior of atomic particles is something made up after the fact to explain and make sense of observations. Just because we have a label for something doesn't mean that what we are labeling is real. In actuality, an elementary particle is an idea in a physicist's mind that serves the purpose of giving them a way to talk about nature. The properties of microscopic objects are inferred from the behavior of the physicist's measuring apparatus and are then treated as if they are real physical things. It is easy to mistake the model for reality and think of subatomic particles as being actually real. In quantum physics, the wave function is not a wave of material things, but rather a probability wave, a wave of possibilities. The wave that is being described is, in a sense, not of this world. The wave function is not real. It is a purely formalistic device or abstract idea. Both the wave function and the atom are essentially ideas, and outside of these ideas, both the wave function and the atom are not there. The wave function does not have any physical correlate. It is not itself an observable thing. And yet, in typical quantum style, it combines both objective and subjective elements. Speaking of the wave function, according to Heisenberg, it introduced something standing in the middle between the idea of an event and the actual event, a strange kind of physical reality just in the middle between possibility and reality. The wave function is essentially passive, in that it cannot stimulate action from within itself. It requires an agent to make a choice among its probabilities for the three-dimensional world to be formed. This is where we come in. Quantum theory implies that immaterial factors that have more of the nature of images and ideas are the blueprint for our universe, actually informing and shaping the evolution of the universe as a whole. Similar to when we are inspired by images in our mind, physical reality appears to be driven by deeper primordial images and ideas. To quote Stapp, we live in an idea-like world, not a matter-like world. This world we live in is like an idea or thought giving itself form, or like a dream that seems unmistakably real while we are in it. The primal stuff of the quantum realm is dreamlike in character, like ideas rather than matter. Stapp continues, the actual events in quantum theory are likewise idea-like. Wheeler goes so far as to liken the universe itself to an idea. This brings to mind the opening lines of philosopher Arthur Schopenhauer's The World as Will and Idea. The world is my idea. The concept of matter has undergone a great number of changes in the history of human thinking. From the results of its experiments, quantum physics has replaced the metaphor of the universe being composed of building blocks to a universe that is composed of an interrelated network of ideas and observations. Arnold Mendel writes, "The most elementary substance of the physical world is dreamlike. In the quantum world, there is no place for matter, in the same way that in the classical world, there is no place for mind." Classical physics theory of a world of matter is converted by quantum physics into a theory of the relationship between matter and mind. Unveiling a great mystery, quantum physics is pointing out that the ultimate nature of the universe is more mind-like than matter-like. The matter of this world seems more akin to the phenomena of dreams rather than that of solid, independent reality. As quantum physics has lifted the veil to our understanding the connection between mind and matter, and hence of consciousness, it can't help but deepen our insight into the nature and operations of our own being at the same time. Sciences made by man, as Pauli writes in a letter to Jung, will always contain statements about man. We can't give a consistent description of the universe without also describing ourselves. We are inside of and part of the universe we are contemplating. What happens inside of us is not only happening inside the universe, but, as if the universe has gotten turned inside out, outside in the universe too. Recognizing the synchronistic correlation between the inner and outer, a chief feature of the phenomena of spiritual awakening is to enter the realm of the quantum, where there is ultimately no separation between things at all. Could it be that quantum physics, in leading scientists to rigorously and rationally understand the permeable and ultimately artificial boundary between the outer physical world and the inner mental subjective world of ideas and imagination, is part of a larger process of the spiritual awakening of our species?